15 minutes, and I'm going to hand over to Chris. Kathleen is a police tactic. Kathleen encircles and contains protesters, normal protesters, in a cordon, effectively, a human cordon for several hours. And this is an image of Heppel last December of something now. I'm going to leave the technology of the kettle to Chris in the second half of the presentation, and I'm going to talk about that a little bit more. Our paper is a response to this episode of Kathleen in particular. So the context was winter 2010, some big protests against proposed raise student fees in London. And in November 2010, one particular protest had led to destruction and some violence and invasion of the Conservative Party headquarters and so on. So the police response afterwards in the next protest was quite draconian, actually. Now, as the kind of introduction mentioned, the four of us worked together in the context of the ICCM project, the International Crowdfunding and Critical Methodologies and Security Studies. And we are one across the five, working on genealogies, history, and time as a methodology. And in the process of methodological reflection, we wanted to find a case study to put into practice some of the theoretical work that we've done on these methodologies. So we chose Kathleen for a variety of reasons. Now, probably you're familiar with Foucault genealogy. Very simply, we consider that genealogy works on historically contingent problematizations, singularities, as we call them. And Kathleen struck us as a particularly good example of one of these. It was recently problematized in the time we were working, 2010, and it's highly contested. It seems, as a practice, it seemed discontinuous in the historical context, in the longer historical context. Policing and crowd control have a particular continuity going for hundreds of years, which I'll mention in a moment. And ketamine seems like rather a break in the continuity of the crowd control tactics. So because of this history of continuity, this continuity of problematization, we decided that this would be a perfect case study for using genealogical methods. And what we wanted to do was to use those methods to trace the emergence and descent of Kepler as a tactic, and to map its contested terrain, the dispositive around Kepler. What kind of strategic need does it respond to? Who are the actors? What knowledges are involved? What languages, concepts are being used with technologies? And when we looked at it closely, yes, the police are the most important actor. All sorts of other actors became involved around the contestation, obviously the protest groups themselves, a particular group of the protesters, the media made a big deal about the controversy of the tactic, the police obviously using the tactic, but also having to defend themselves in front of Parliament, and many parliamentarians became very agitated by what they saw as harsh police tactics against what were often the school children. We're not only focusing on the classic genealogical methodology, but we're also thinking about forms of temporality, as Chris mentioned, and materiality as well. So as I mentioned, Kettling became publicly prominent in 2010 in this case, but actually the history in the UK goes back about 10 years, back to the major protests of 2000-2001. In 2010, it became front page news, there were all sorts of viral videos going down, front page commentary and so on, police called front committees to account for themselves. But there is a longer history as well. There are examples of Kettling in the German context that Sven found for us. The 1986 Hamburg Kettle, a few incidents in Freiburg in the last 5 years, Munich in 1992, Copenhagen in Germany in 2009. And what's strange about the historical emergence of Kettling is it seems to go against the history of crowd control. And now, one of the things I just looked up a moment ago before it started is the 1714 Riot Act, the very famous law of the British context. The Riot Act was a piece of legislation, a law, and in the case of the riot, King's sergeants, this is before the police even existed, would literally read out the Riot Act to the rioters as a warning. Once they read the Riot Act, they had legal permission to basically go in and disperse the crowd. And the Riot Act has become part of English and Latin, if you read some of the writers, have given them a very stern warning. So dispersal is the central technology in the riot, and dispersal has been, we think, the main crowd control police tactic for hundreds of years. Now, Claudia and I talked about this earlier on, so I won't dwell too much on what this means in a political context, but dispersal seems to be about preventing the formation of a mob, preventing the formation of some kind of collective political subjectivity. Now we skip over hundreds of years of continuity to when this tactic starts to get challenged. The 1990 poll tax riots in London seem to be a pivotal moment here. The dispersal of poll tax protesters seem to be a spread disorder rather than dispersed threat of political subject. Similar problems seem to occur in various May Day protests in the 1990s, Seattle, Genoa, London. The dispersal just seems to spread disruption and violence. And we can go back a bit further than that as well, to the 1970s and 1980s, and the coal mine strikes in the UK, when flying pickets sort of emerged as a real problem for the police. Pickets would just form in unpredictable places, in certain places where the police couldn't keep up, the highly mobile forms of protest. So one of our hypotheses is that there's a kind of coevolution of forms of protest and forms of policing. We can contrast these disruptive and dispersed forms of protest with, let's call it traditional protest, the march. Marches still happen, of course. Marches tend to be rather well ordered, rather unified. They represent a political voice of some kind of collective subject, highly symbolic. And they tend to be very heavily planned as well. March organisers tend to submit their plans to the police. Policing plans are agreed in advance, mainly to avoid disruption. The marches don't also descend into a riot, maybe all the police do in those situations. But these forms of disruptive protest, flash mobs, flying pickets, and so on, seem to hint at a greater diversity, that you can't expect a group of protesters to be a unified mass, which is at least what the police evolution of tactics responds to. And one of the most recent examples of this coevolution is a direct response to this case of Keckney, actually. Some people who were kettles, some protesters, in response they developed a technology called Suki. What it was a way of using protesters' smartphones, Twitter, GPS, all of these things embedded in smartphones, to take real-time information from protesters and feed it back to protesters, crowdsourcing effectively, about where kettles might be forming, where the police might be starting to form kettles. The name Suki actually comes from an old nursery rhyme. Polly put the kettle on, Suki take it off again. The origins of the nursery rhyme. That's quite nice. The police response to this was something that Paddy was talking about, using the Twitter feed to communicate with protesters, so that not only protesters but bystanders as well. If you're in the area, beware, there's a kettle forming here, take turns of rooms and so on. So developing forms of information, communication, co-evolution here. Now Chris is going to develop a theorisation, I've only got a minute or so left. I want to talk about Keckney in the context of biblical circulation just now. One thing I will mention is the crowd. Now Claire has given us a wonderful introduction to the concept of the crowd. But it strikes us that the imaginary of the crowd, going back to Bonn in the late 19th century, is very much at work in these tactics. So the crowd is a kind of pathological excess to the population, a kind of contagion, equivalent to Freud's notion of hysteria, where it scale up the population. So not a mass political subject, not a symbolic unified group of the voice, but rather something pathological, abnormal, adjunct to the population. And this seems to be what's at work in the imaginary of the police. Now what's important to note is that obviously this isn't a real description of the protesters. One of the big things about this controversial episode was that the tactics seemed very much out of proportion with who the protesters were and what they were doing. So yes, there have been episodes of violence and destruction in previous protests, but a lot of the people in this group here were school children, harmless, really, school children, who weren't particularly threatening. There are viral videos of people inside a kettle chanting, "This is not right, this is not a riot," showing that they're posing a threat, they're not planning destruction, they're not planning violence, the number of police response to Kettling than is disproportionate. So it's important to recognise that Kettling is preventative, not curative. It doesn't try to quell crowds, it tries to prevent the emergence of crowds. It's driven by a fear of an imagined crowd, it's not a tactic against crowds. It seems to, in a way, it creates a non-crowd, it creates basically a lump of bodies. Humiliated bodies, all the bodies, tired, cold, without access to water, toilet facilities, and so on, and they're kept there for many, many hours. I'll end on two brief comparisons. Kettling is not used against rioters. We had very extensive riots in the UK last summer, aided by reform of social technology for rapid mobilisation of protesters, not protesters, rioters. And what was interesting about that was the police seemed to have no response. Most of the time they just stood by and allowed the rioting to happen. And the thing that tends to end the tradition of summer riots in the UK for decades was basically the weather. Once it stopped raining in summer, people got home and stopped messing around on the streets. So there's all sorts of perplexed politicians saying, why not doing anything? Why not exacting? Let's get water cans in. And the police really said we have no response to this other than having more riot control police with batons and horses and shields and so on. And then finally, Kettling isn't used against the Occupy movement either. The Occupy movement seems to be completely the opposite, but seems to turn the logic on its head. Occupy is basically a be stationary as a collection of protesters. Occupy space, don't move. And that seems to produce quite a different balance of power. One example was the occupation of the grounds around St Paul's Cathedral by a protester camp, an Occupy camp. And the real dilemma for the police was removing protesters who were being non-provocative would basically involve violence, using force to remove people who were just being perfectly stationary. And it led to the resignation from the board of St Paul's Cathedral of one or two of the priests there. Okay, so now I hand over to Chris, who will talk about the technology of Kettling itself.
So Kettling operates as a spatial technique of
governance, first and foremost, is decided to counter the spatial dynamics through containment and concentration. Normally, kettering operates as one practice alongside a number of other spatial practices, including surveillance, police escorts, and designated protest routes. Conceptually, we begin to conceive this phenomenon as a strategy of territorialization. Here we've drawn on recent works in social theory and human geography, which have begun to investigate the notion of territory not in classical terms as the foundation of a polity, but as a device that regulates movement by configuring relations inside and outside. Territory, in this sense, functions as a material technology of control. It modifies access and modulates rhythms of behavior. Drawing on Deleuze and Guattari, we might say that kettle is a means for re-territorializing the de-territorializing potential of the protesting crowd. So the double of deterritorialization and re-territorialization allows for situating the kettle in the urban milieu understood as a space of circulations. For Foucault, the urban milieu was, here we quote, the space in which, a series of uncertain or aleatory events unfold. Securing this aleatory space is aimed not at hindering, but at organizing circulations, eliminating the dangerous element, making a division between good and bad circulation, and maximizing the good circulation by diminishing the bad. Policing operates within this milieu, since the milieu is a medium of action and the element in which it circulates. If security seeks to enhance the circulations, then it looks to operate against these contemporary protests, which aim to specifically disrupt these circulations that take place within the city. And here, I think Andrew talked about the idea of the flying kettle, which developed in the 1970s as a technique, specifically by miners during the miners' strikes, to move away from the form of symbolic protest based on solidarity and unity to small groups of highly mobile workers. They'd be driven in to different locuses of energy, so coke depots, coal depots, etc. And the whole strategy is to disrupt these circulations of energy for the most part. So a very different kind of idea, a very different strategy when it comes to protest. And this, I think, plays an important part in the genealogy that we're trying to trace. How are new forms of protest growing on this disruptive form of potential? So, the kettle divides the population. It's not directed against the population as a whole, but it's designed to isolate parts of it, that is, the bad circulations. The bad circulations that are explicitly looking to interrupt the good circulations. In order to facilitate the urban circulations and repeating urban middle life, the subpopulation of disruptive protesters needs to be isolated and contained. Importantly, the decision of who gets kettled is not made on the basis of what has been done, a crime which has been committed, or on the basis of isolating charismatic leaders, or those who even seem the most agitated. But it's based on the potential for disruption which anyone within a certain geographical proximity might have. So those who are held or guilty by association of a crime which may not necessarily have been committed yet. This in particular has caused considerable controversy as residents and children have been found to be held with no optional exit, usually for several hours, simply by being in the wrong place at the wrong time. In order to secure circulation, kettle means of hindering the disruptive elements from circulating by barring movement. In this sense, the kettle functions as the underside of a liberal governmentality aimed at enhancing good circulations by identifying and halting potentially bad circulations. It does so by screening the urban space in a highly flexible manner, establishing fleeting territorial enclosures composed of the flesh of police bodies reinforced with body armor, shields, visor, helmets, and other equipment. Obviously, the kettle is not a territory in the traditional sense. Its boundary is not the boundary of a city wall. Instead, it constitutes a topological space. The kettle draws, so to say, city walls inside the city on an ad hoc basis. It produces an inner outside. Operating from within the milieu, it carves out an extremely volatile, transferable, and last but not least, temporary space. And here we move into how this territorialization, or the implications of this territorialization on time and affect. We believe that the spatial aspects of enclosure is related in important ways to this tackle aspect. Drawing on materials such as police manuals, media reports, blogs, and legal texts, it became clear that Aspect Kill has its own temporal structure. More precisely, there's a temporal calculus which is imminent to the technology of the kettle. The kettle is designed to deal with the effect and intensity of protest by temporal means. The temporal calculation is tied in the first instance to the temporality of the crowd. The manual of association, the Association of Chief Police Officers states that the kettle amounts to, quote, buying time. In this view, the kettle acts to suspend the present state of affairs, thus preventing escalation. The kettle extends the period of time where the protest is kept from becoming a disruptive protest. In this sense, it is a feature of contingency planning, which constitutes a time of deferral. The movement of the protest is frozen with the sole purpose of releasing protesters sometime later. But of course, the kettle doesn't simply look to extend the present, it looks to act upon it. It looks to suffocate the dangerous potentialities that exist amongst these protesters. And this is the strategic aim, we believe, of the temporal tactic of deferral. If we turn again to Peter Waddington, kettling appears as an effective technology in the sense that it regulates the effective potential of the crowd. Following Brian Massumi, effect inscribes future possibilities into the present. Effect is activating. It holds the promise of becoming. Professor Waddington seeks to understand this, and he writes, intention-filled environment sparks will inevitably fly. Therefore, he advises kettling as a tactic to calm a situation. The kettle is a means to induce boredom, he says, into the turbulent passions of the crowd. In this sense, it is a patient technique. It decelerates the dynamics of the crowd. It seeks to exhaust through a suspension of freedom of movement. Of course, such an anesthetics of the crowd can itself produce fear. In Copenhagen, at the conference on climate change in 2009, protesters were held for about 4 hours on the ground in December, handcuffed and without permission to use toilet facilities. So kettling here serves to frighten, to shame, to isolate, and to demoralize. The kettle provided the time to destitute political subjectivity. It combined the application of violence with the conditions of a given milieu, not least the cold weather, to terminate the collective political subjectivity of the protesters.